fourth part of a four-part lesson. The overall lesson has been titled Transcending a Religion of Fear. In this last part, we have been unpacking the idea that Jesus gave us that if you want to transform your relationship with fear, you're going to need to transform your relationship with your enemy. So one of the things that Jesus taught us, we saw over these last 2 weeks, is that there is a reality that is bigger than is instinctive. There is a deeper dimension of human experience than we typically access. We have some code terms for it. We talk about the divine life, the spirit life. We call it the deeper life. But one of the cardinal components of this deeper life is the transformative power of love. A love that is bigger than romance. It includes romance, but it's bigger than romance. A love that is deeper than sex. It includes sex, but it is bigger than sex. A love that is bigger than friendship and bigger than familiarity and bigger than being bound together by shared experience. It contains each of these, but supersedes them all. It is a love that is capable of transforming the lover as well as transforming the loved. It is big enough to extend to those who love us in return. It is also big enough to extend to those who do not love us in return. In fact, it is big enough to extend to those who will harm us, hurt us. But we've seen this depth of love, this experienceable reality, this transforming and transformative power, it is not something that we just stumble into. It must be trained for diligently. In order to experience, we must train. And generation after generation who have gone before us testify to the efficacy of the training. Generation after generation who have gone before us attest to the transformative power of this deep kind of love. We have a great disservice, we've said in the past, in our English language because we've got one word for it. And it is this multifaceted reality that needs so many more words. And this particular kind of love, love that can love bigger than the quid pro quo experience that often characterizes love, this moment in history direly needs us to take up the training. Because our world is kind of falling apart, absent a core of people who are equipped for, capable to function in this kind of transformative love. So last week we laid out three parts of the training regimen. We explored the first briefly, seek first to understand and then be understood. We explored it briefly because it is kind of an integrated part of our community's life together. We do explore the story of the other. We do seek first to understand and then be understood. Our practices of self-awareness and self-disclosure, what we just talked about with conflict resolution, nonviolent communication, having lunch with the other, learning the story of the other, all the things that we talk about so regularly and practice together, train us to explore the story of the other. The interior landscape of the other, train us to seek first to understand and then be understood. Well, this week I want to take up looking at the second part of the training regimen, developing in the skills of forgiveness. I mentioned over the last couple of weeks a great companion book would be Desmond Tutu's book, The Book of Forgiving. We will refer to that a lot as we look at what the fourfold path of forgiveness is. But today I want to begin with some introductory remarks to forgiveness. Several weeks ago, when we started this lesson on learning to love our enemy, we began with some preliminary remarks about what loving the enemy is and what loving the enemy is not. I would like to do that same thing with forgiveness. What forgiveness is, just one thing, and what forgiveness is not, just a handful of things. First, forgiveness is selfish. Forgiveness is selfish. Forgiveness is beneficial to our own well-being. Forgiveness avails us of a depth of freedom. Forgiveness capacitates us to be free from our hurtful past. Forgiveness helps us be free from those who have harmed us in the past so they don't have a lingering control or effect in our lives. Forgiveness allows us a freedom from future victimization because it is a common pattern that once victimized, we create patterns that will create that victimization yet again. Forgiveness heals. It heals us. It heals families. It heals the communities that we live in. Forgiveness is beneficial to our own well-being. Forgiveness is selfish. When I was 14 years old, my stepfather left us. There had been some real ugliness leading up to his departure, and it was especially ugly as he was departing. If you can imagine something worse by half than the movie War of the Roses. There was plenty of hateful behavior to go around, but I had taken a role in the family as the defender of the oppressed, and so consequently I was particularly focused on his hateful behavior. And then he was gone. And the trauma and the death threats and the volatility and the eggshell walking, it all just stopped. And I hated him. And I rehearsed my hatred over and over. I rehearsed my personal grievances over and over. I rehearsed a laundry list of grievances on behalf of my family. And about this time, within a week or two after his final departure, two family friends, an elder couple in our lives, drove down from Los Angeles to San Diego, where we lived. And they came to bring some calm and to bring some normalcy and to bring some healing to our family, to the war-torn aftermath that was our family, Uncle Jim and Auntie Betty. They weren't blood uncles and aunts. They'd been at the church where my mother was a young woman, and they'd kind of adopted her and consequently adopted my father when they married, and then he died, and then adopted us as a family through the years. So they came down this particular time, as they did many times, to restore some normalness, simple things like having meals together again, going for walks and playing board games and watching sports. And they took each of us for a walk in order to talk. When Uncle Jim took me for a walk, he got me to tell my stories about the war, what I'd seen and how I'd felt and what I'd done. And he got me to talk about my hatred. And he kept me talking in this little loop that we would walk where we'd leave our house, we'd go down to the beach, and then we'd circle back around. And when we were just about back to the house, he made a quick observation that has stuck with me since. "You know," he said, "Bill's gone. He's 3 hours away now. And if you hate him, he's not going to know. It's not going to hurt him. It's not going to punish him for the bad things that he's done. It's not going to pay him back for the pain that he caused you. It's not going to pay him back for the pain that he caused your brothers or that he caused your mother. He's not even going to know. Your hatred isn't going to affect him, not even a little bit. But," he said, "your hatred is going to affect you. It's going to affect you a lot. At least it's going to make you a hater. But it'll probably make you bitter. And it'll probably spill out past the bad feelings you have toward Bill. Might make you a little bit more self-protective." He said, "It could make you depressed. Most likely, it'll keep you kind of angry. It may affect how you approach other people. It could cause you to push others out of your life." He said, "Hatred could really mess up your life. And all the while, it isn't going to affect him a bit." And he said, "That'd be a real shame, because he really did do some awful things. And it would be a shame if the damage kept going even now that he's gone." And he said, when we're just about to the door, "You know, when the Bible talks about forgiveness, it's not so that bad people can get away with bad things. It's so that people in situations like you're in right now don't have to live with the aftermath of those bad things for the rest of their lives." And then we went back into the house, and that's all he said. But the injustice of the whole thing stuck with me, that Bill could leave and not suffer my hatred, but I would. The injustice of it all kind of worked its way into my 14-year-old brain, and I determined then that I was just selfish enough to figure out how to forgive him so I wouldn't have to suffer the aftermath of all this shitstorm that had gone on in our house. That happened to me. And in the years since then, I've seen that kind of dynamic play out in a lot of lives in the years since. It's a real thing. I've seen it since then many times. When we learn to forgive, the primary beneficiary is ourselves. So what forgiveness is? Forgiveness is selfish. We learn to forgive so that we don't suffer. We learn to forgive so that we don't carry residual damage. We learn to forgive so that we don't harm our bodies and our minds and our relationships. We learn to forgive so that we don't carry the caustic effects of ongoing long-term anger and resentment. Forgiveness is a gift that we give ourselves. Forgiveness is selfish. But forgiveness is not easy. It requires hard work. Training we've been talking about. It requires consistency. Forgiveness is not weakness. It requires courage and strength. Forgiveness does not subvert justice. It actually creates space for justice. Because when our hearts are not clouded with hatred, are not clouded, consumed with vengeance, then we are able to create spaces in which justice is established, is won. Also, forgiveness is not forgetting. In fact, forgiveness, as we'll see when we look at the process, requires that we intentionally remember our pain. And sometimes our brain does this little trick for us to help us not have to remember our pain. Sometimes we would prefer to forget our pain, and the process of forgiveness actually crowds up against that and makes us deal with and grapple with the painful things that we would like to forget. Because forgiveness is so demanding, sometimes we don't start there. Sometimes we don't start with forgiving the wound that we have sustained immediately. We may need to start with the practices that get us ready to forgive rather than with the practices of forgiving. So today, a couple of pointers on getting ready to forgive. Pointer number one. We ready ourselves for forgiveness by accepting ourselves where we are in the process of forgiveness, honestly. And if we're not ready to forgive, we accept ourselves not ready to forgive. If we're not ready, then ought isn't going to help anything. If we're not ready to forgive, then should isn't going to help anything. If we're not ready to forgive, then the desire to forgive isn't going to help anything. If we're not ready to forgive, then the duty of forgiveness isn't going to help us. Training is what helps us. As we've said in the past, we do things we can do today to enable ourselves to do things that we can't do tomorrow. So the first step in preparing ourselves is to discern and to acknowledge where we are and where we are not. I read a story recently of a woman whose son had become an addict to heroin. And she hated those who had facilitated his addiction. And along the way, along the lines that we're talking about right now, she realized that her hatred was undercutting her ability to be available, to be present to her son's healing process, and so she began this training process. Now, last week, we talked about how you can't go from hatred to love. What you do is you go from hatred to non-hatred by doing the practices. And if you keep showing up and keep doing the practices, then you can go from non-hatred to understanding. You can actually understand your enemy. And if you keep doing the practice, you can go from understanding to empathy. You can say, if I were in that situation, I might have done the same kinds of things. I can see in myself those things. And if you keep doing the practices and so forth, we talked about how it's a series of processes. Well, she had developed in her training to the place where she was on the cusp of empathy. She was trying to see how she could empathize with those who, also caught in addiction, had drawn her son into addiction. And she tried to empathize, and she realized she couldn't. She hated them. So she backed up a step, and she said, okay, maybe I can empathize with their families. And I can train myself in the process of empathy by grieving with them their own children's addiction. But she realized as she tried to do that, she couldn't access that place either. It was just too difficult. When she tried, it hurt too badly. It was too raw. And she was casting about trying to figure out where she could begin practicing empathy when she saw on the television the story of her hometown football team having lost an important game, and as the story was going on, she saw the heartbreak on their faces, and she decided that she could practice empathy with them for their heartbreak, for a football game. She could not find that empathetic place in her heart for her son's addict friends. She could not find that empathetic place in her heart for the families of her son's addict friends. But she could find that place in her heart for the local supporters of the football team. And that's where she started. And she practiced at the best possible place to practice, where she could, where she was. And over time, building on the empathy that she started there and in a series of places like that, she realized that she could stretch her empathy to the place where now she could put herself in the painful position that the families of her son's addict friends were. And then eventually she was able to extend that same kind of empathy to her son's friends in their own addictions, and finally to her son himself. Pointer number one, readying ourselves for forgiveness, is to start where we are, where we really are. And we start practicing the training regimen there, doing the things that develop us and expand us and extend us, doing what we can do today so that tomorrow we can do what we cannot yet do. Pointer number one, we start where we are. Pointer number two is it's often a good idea to start backwards. One of the main impediments to forgiveness is how our field of vision gets narrowed when we experience pain or harm. So, it's a good way to widen our field of vision back out to begin to think not about forgiving, but instead being forgiven. It's a good idea to start backwards. Jesus alluded to this dynamic in one of his teachings when he said, if you find yourself performing some religious observance, and then you remember there that you have hurt someone, or in the old language it says, if someone has aught against you, stop your religious observance, go and make it right. We hurt one another. We just do. It's part of being human. It's wired into the reality that we, each of us, carry a shadow side. Oftentimes, our hurt is perpetrated inadvertently. We don't intend to. It just happens. But when we do, it's kind of common for us to start cringing inside. Start dodging it so we don't have to look at it. Our brain kicks in with that wonderful gift of editing again, and it kind of edits out how we did the bad thing, and it helps us focus on the other person's bad thing. Our brains will come and start us dodging and bobbing and weaving and doing all the things that we do. So we ready ourselves for forgiving by challenging ourselves to undertake the process of being forgiven. We ask forgiveness for our own missteps, our own hurtful behaviors, as a way of getting ourselves ready to forgive. Seeking forgiveness is an exercise in expanding our vision back out. It is an exercise in unblinding ourselves. Self-deception is just wired into our brains. It is the nemesis we all face on our spiritual journeys. We don't want to see certain things, and so our brain accommodates and just shuts them off so we don't see them. And one of the things that we don't want to see is our own bad behaviors. We develop an uncanny capacity to justify our behaviors. No villain ever thinks he or she is a villain. But to seek forgiveness is to train ourselves in seeing past that blindness. And it prepares us to forgive because it readies us for sharing with kindredness that blindness with the one who has harmed us. Because once we see our own blindness, we have a greater empathy for the blindness of the one who has hurt us. I read a story in one book. It was either Pema Chodron's book, one of hers, or Jack Kornfield. I can't remember, so somebody should get credit for the story. But it was the story of going on a retreat and running into an old friend. So when I was with my old friend at this retreat, I heard several say to me about her how irritated they were that she was always late. And whenever she would show up, she would always justify her tardiness with what sounded like good reasons, but those justifications just came off as a kind of self-righteousness. Well, during the retreat, I saw my friend sitting on a bench. Her face was red. She was clearly angry. Her appointment was late. Her appointment was 15 minutes late. And she was sitting there scribbling notes. It was hard not to point out the irony of the situation, but I wanted to see if she could see it. She didn't. She couldn't put herself in the shoes of those that she had made wait. She remained indignant. Now, it'd be easy to judge this woman for her blindness if we didn't all carry some version of it ourselves. Blindness to our own flaws is just kind of wired into our humanity. One of the reasons that we study the Enneagram together, that way of looking at our personalities, is how well it maps out for us where our blindnesses tend to run. We tend to look at the roadmap the Enneagram provides and says, oh, when I am blind, not if, when I am blind, it will probably be over here. We get ourselves ready to forgive by pushing up against our own blindness. Blindness prepares us to be forgiving. Awareness of our blindness. So, when we realize that we've hurt someone, Jesus teaches us, we ready ourselves to forgive by training ourselves to ask for forgiveness. We take up the practice of seeing our own wrong. We train ourselves to ask for forgiveness for our own wrong. We train ourselves to take responsibility for the hurt that we have wittingly or unwittingly caused another. We challenge the reticence that we all have inside to admit our wrongs and to acknowledge the hurt that we've caused. So when Robin is teaching us about how our different personalities in the Enneagram have our own particular brands of blindness, she often uses this phrase. It's important to acknowledge, she says, the difference between intent and impact. In other words, we often blind ourselves by telling ourselves a story of our own innocence. In other words, our own version of blindness is able of to convince us that from where I sit, I'm innocent. From where I sit, my motives are pure. From where I sit, my intentions are blameless. But the impact of our words, the impact of our actions, are another story. Someone not blinded with the same blindness that we are is able to experience that impact, be hurt by that impact, and see quite clearly how we are not as innocent as we claim to be. No matter how sincerely we feel our innocence, the impact is different from the intent. So we train ourselves to ask for forgiveness. We train ourselves to look past our own protestations of innocence. We train ourselves to see the hurt of the other from the perspective of the other. We learn to hear what they say. We learn to see past our intent to the impact. We acknowledge it. We don't argue our cause because we're not trying at this moment to justify ourselves or vindicate ourselves. We're trying to train ourselves to see what we can't see. And so we do not cross-examine the one who was hurt as a way of undercutting their case. We simply listen and we acknowledge. We try to acknowledge their action, their experience of our actions. We're training ourselves to see through the eyes of another. We're training ourselves to empathize. We're training ourselves to see how we might feel if we could see through the lens through which they are looking and how we might suffer at our own hands if we were in their shoes. Then we train ourselves to offer an apology, to touch the harm that they felt with words of regret, words that heal. It is what we want when we try to forgive. When we try to forgive, we are going to want to be heard. When we try to forgive and we tell about our hurt, we are going to want to be seen. We will want the one who has harmed us to see past the innocent story inside of themselves that they are telling about themselves. And so, we offer what we seek. We will want them to see what we see. We will want to learn how to see what they see about ourselves. We train ourselves to see through the lens of the other. We offer remorse for how we have hurt them. We offer remorse for having been blinded by our own innocence story and having been blinded to the impact that we have. We train ourselves to offer what we desire, remorse, amends, seeing from the other's perspective, learning not to cause that negative impact again. Again, it's what we want when we try to learn how to forgive. We want the one who hurt us to see it. We want to be understood. We want to be acknowledged. So we start there. We learn to offer what we will want. We train ourselves to see what is very difficult to see, that our blindness causes us to not see our innocent intent, causes us to see only our innocent intent and not our harmful impact. We train ourselves seeing through the eyes of the other, making amends. It's what, again, we want. So getting ourselves ready for the fourfold path of forgiving, first, we allow ourselves to start where we are, where we really are. And that place, we start the training process. We take up the practices there, where we truly are. And the training itself will help us move forward. To get ourselves ready for the fourfold path of forgiving, we work backward. We learn to forgive by training ourselves to seek forgiveness. We train ourselves to see past our own blindness. We train ourselves to see past our own story of innocence. We train ourselves to see how our actions, our deeds, our words impact. We take up the training regimen. And if we do, we become equipped to access that divine love that is so expansive and transformative. That divine love that we each carry, because we are all, every one of us, carriers of the indwelling Spirit of God. It is there. It is within us. We take up the training so that we can access that which we carry. So, Lord, may we be steadfast in the training processes, people able to step into the world that is in such dire need of this divine level of love, able to change the dynamic in the world around us because we are carriers, accessors of this deep capacity for transformative love. May we learn the way of loving our enemy, and may we learn the way of forgiveness. Be that so, in Jesus' name. Amen.